This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk.
Hi, I'm here with James Miles. We're talking a wee bit about your LiveX 100 indice. What is it made up of and what is it?
The LiveX 100 seeks to track the 100 most traded wines in the fine wine world. So it tends to be weighted in a similar way to the trade that we do on LiveX.
So is it volume weighted or?
So actually it's not just weighted by price, i.e. it's not just weighted by adding all the cases up in the index and tracking the change in that. We actually production and scarcity weight the index as well. So what we're trying to reflect is the actual economic impact of each wine in the marketplace.
You were saying earlier about, you know, for the five top first growths make up a big chunk of your indices.
Yeah, so the 25 or 30 first growths from the last 15 vintages that score 95 points or more from Robert Parker account for about 60% of the index. And the index is 90% weighted to Bordeaux. So it very closely reflects the kind of the business that we're doing on the platform. And I suppose reinforces how the economics of the business is weighted towards Bordeaux and the first growths in particular.
Do you find, like, for example, if a company's stock price decreases and their capitalization or their value on the stock market drops below a certain threshold, company gets removed from the index, and obviously it has huge implications for its stock price going forward after that.
Right, yeah.
Does that happen with you guys, or is it not quite there yet?
Yeah, we do. I mean, on a quarterly basis, we do review the components, and they're reasonably consistent. I mean, particularly the Bordeaux wines, they tend to remain pretty much unchanged from one quarter to the next. Where we have more difficulty is with the non-Bordeaux component, because one of the criteria for being included in the index is that wines must be regularly traded on the platform and there must be a regular price. And so outside of the most recent vintages for say, Domaine Romani Conti or some of the Rhone wines that are included, finding someone making a consistent price is quite difficult. So we tend to rotate those wines relatively frequently. There is also a time limit. We essentially remove wines from the index when they're more than 25 years old, largely because they become too scarce and too illiquid. And equally, we find it more difficult to find wines in the condition that meet the contract terms on LiveX. So those tend to get shuffled out of the index. So the oldest wines we currently have is 1986 vintage at the moment. But because the index is production and scarcity weighted, the older the wine gets, the smaller the weighting is in the index.
Yep.
So to reflect the fact there's less supply.
When it comes off, you don't need to rebase the index too much, or?
It is rebased. It is clearly rebased, and new wines are added, mostly younger wines from more recent vintages. Mm-hmm. But clearly, the index is very heavily weighted to younger vintages. So currently, the 2005 would have the biggest weighting in the index. And that's also where our trade is concentrated. So that makes perfect sense.
One of the uses of an index is that people can make bets against that index. For example, you know, I own some stocks on a FTSE tracker, effectively I own a parcel of different shares, and that gets rejiggled around every now and then and keeps me quite happy. What sort of uses are people using the index for?
We certainly have ambitions to make the LiveX 100 Fine Wine Index investable, and there's a huge pent-up demand for that. We get a huge number of inquiries about it. We have actually successfully completed a cash-settled future on the LiveX 100 Fine Wine Index.
So that's where someone says, if the index goes to this point, I'll pay?
Yes. I mean, basically, we had a spread betting company, or several spread betting companies, actually, who were prepared to make a market in the LiveX 100. If they were making a spread of 200 to 205, you were able to buy it at 205. And if it closed at the end of the period at 220, you'd collect a profit of 15 on however many pounds a point you'd bet. So in essence, that is entirely synthetic cash-settled future on the marketplace. And clearly, I have no doubt that a derivative market will develop, as it has done for other relatively illiquid assets like commercial property, for example, in the last few years. And I think it's an interesting way, actually, to play the market, because clearly you don't have storage costs, you don't have provenance concerns, you don't have to take physical delivery of the goods. So it should prove to be both a low-cost vehicle for people to speculate, but also, more importantly, allow the major stockholders and maybe even the chateau a way or a vehicle for hedging their existing stocks in fine wine, which is an increasingly volatile commodity. So I do see a big role for that in the future.
Given we're talking about wine, liquidity is obviously a big thing. And the nice thing about a derivative is that you can have multiples higher than the actual underlying physical. So if there's, I don't know, £1 billion a year worth of trade in the underlying physical, you can get to £5-10 billion worth of trade, which adds a huge amount of liquidity and price discovery process.
It does. Absolutely. If one looks at the trades of metals or gold or agricultural products, the derivatives markets are many, many times, even many hundreds of times in some instances, bigger than the underlying physical market. So it does open up huge new opportunities, as you say, for price discovery and for the existing participants in the market, because it would certainly massively improve the liquidity of the physical commodity. I think for that realistically to happen, one does have to update and modernize the plumbing within the fine wine business, because it is still relatively creaky. What one does need is a better ordered settlement and clearing infrastructure, which isn't quite in place as things stand at the moment.
What do you mean by that, in terms of for the sale of the underlying physical?
Yes, exactly. I mean, the big issue for everyone in the fine wine business, including ourselves, is that every time there is a transaction that goods are moved physically from one location to another location, and clearly there's a lot of cost involved in that process. There's often a lot of problem with wines that go missing or get damaged in that process. And it's also a very time-consuming process. So one is constantly waiting for wine to be shipped from A to B, and often it's not commercially viable to ship one case. So one has to also wait until you've got a large quantity of wine before it becomes commercially viable to move it. So that slows the cycle time down. So, you know, the advantage of having a more sophisticated settlement system whereby wines were stored in a central location and you had a data warehouse of listing ownership of wine, so that you could dematerialize the trade in fine wine, and that would allow people to do many more trades, essentially. You know, if one thinks,
Fort Knox holds the gold and everybody just shifts
exactly,
where it goes.
Exactly.
Well, it used to hold gold anyway.
Exactly. And that sounds like an ambitious project. But I actually think with the technology the way it is now, it could be done relatively cheaply, because databases obviously got a lot cheaper. Communications were a lot cheaper. Barcoding technology has improved enormously in the last few years. So I personally now think that this is not pipe dream. This is something that could easily happen in the fine wine trade in the next 5 to 10 years. And if one looks at the cycle time in the trade now, by which I mean time at which you sell a wine and you actually get paid for it, possibly 45 to 60 days on average. It's a lot quicker than that on LiveX. But if one compares that with financial markets, when it's anywhere from T plus zero, i.e. from any point from today to 2 or 3 days, clearly there's massive improvement in terms of the velocity of the market and the number of times that these things could be traded. So that's the upside for us and other sort of intermediaries in the marketplace.
The big problem with an index is that a lot of your prices are based on such a small group of wines, which means that if there was a large derivative market with many multiple times, the owner of Chateau Lafite can effectively move the market, take a bet, and then move the market in such a way that it is good for them.
Yes.
Even if they make a loss on the physical, they could make a killing in the derivatives. And let's face it, you've got people like the Rothschild who are known for their banking savvy. So there is some risks there.
I guess there are. I mean, there are risks actually people have tried to corner all sorts of markets, from silver to gold to mostly they've ultimately failed.
Rothschild have done quite well in the past.
Yes, they say. I don't know whether they've ever cornered a market particularly, but
they did a good job in gold in what the Napoleonic Wars.
Yes, I mean, I think that while the wine market is a small market, it would still be quite difficult to manipulate. And funny enough, actually, in the LiveX 100, we don't include any on-premier wines at all. So we're only really measuring the price of wines which have already established a level and are already physically available and been released on the marketplace.
But we did say earlier that the release price of the 2005 shifted the market for the older vintages as well.
Absolutely.
So there is a correlation between on-premier price and the market prices at the moment.
Yes, that's true. I mean, you know, I think fine wine is, particularly Bordeaux, is a very open market. I don't think there's anyone realistically big enough or powerful enough to be able to manipulate prices for any length of time. If that was the case, there wouldn't be the sort of volatility and price changes that there are. It would be a much less interesting marketplace. So, yes, I mean, there are obviously issues that need to be dealt with. My own view is that they will be, and I think that there is a future for derivatives on indices in the future.
Just before we finish up here, James, what's happened to the prices during the credit crunch? Money's obviously got tighter, pound dropped, and I understand a lot of European people came in and purchased wine in England, which may have kept the market up. But what's going on since October or so?
Well, we publish various indices which track prices, including the LiveX 100 index, which is very much viewed as the sort of industry benchmark for fine wine prices. And that
all over the world or just in the UK?
I think very much all over the world now. I mean, you know, the LiveX 100 is quoted in China, in Poland, in the States, all across Europe. So, you know, I think it's very much filled a big void for, you know, not just in wine, funnily enough, but actually as a barometer for luxury goods in general. And the index is down about 20% from its peak. And funnily enough...
When was the peak?
In June last year. And funnily enough, actually, January and February were up 3%. So...
And what's the price priced in pounds?
The index is priced in pounds, as really wine is, to be honest with you, because such a large proportion of the market is secondary market is done in London. I think most wine prices around the world are benchmarked against sterling. So clearly, I mean, I think the point you're making, alluding to quite correctly, is that in some ways the falls have been flattered by the weakness of sterling.
Yeah.
If you look at prices in dollar terms or in yen terms or in euro terms, then, you know, they're down by 40% or more if you're looking at them in yen terms. So, and that's definitely helped the market because there's certainly a lot more exporting going on by the UK trade.
Yeah.
And that's certainly helped out the UK vis-a-vis wine trade in other major centres around the world.
And just one question. Hong Kong, a lot of people have been talking about Hong Kong. Chinese changed their duties, etc., about a year ago. And people are saying Hong Kong's going to be the next big trading centre for wine, maybe servicing the Asian market. Do you see a lot of relationships developing between you guys and people in Hong Kong? Or are you seeing a pickup in customers?
Well, we've already got, I mean, a large number of customers in Hong Kong and in the region. So that hasn't changed. What has changed is that a lot of the major UK traders have set up offices in Hong Kong, recognizing that it's an increasingly important part of their business.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to get closer to it and understand it better. So I think it has been an important contributor to our customers' income over the last few years, accounting for 25 to 30% in many cases of their business. Hong Kong, no doubt, will become an important centre for the region, as London and New York are currently. I mean, it shares many of the same assets as we do in terms of being a relatively open, free economy, you know, a well-established service centre with low taxes, and that's what Hong Kong's good at. You know, so I'm sure that they will be a very successful hub, and will only continue to do more business in that part of the world.
Excellent. All right, James, I think we'll wrap it up there. Thank you very much for your time. Okay then, James, we'll wrap it up there. Cheers very much.
Cheers.